allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is Mr. Whitmire here? Here we see. Can I get attendance for roll call, please?
Frank?
Here.
Adams?
Here.
Shire?
Here.
Demeline?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
I'd like it to be noted that Mr. Dawson is not here. We need to vote for approval.
I'll make a motion to excuse Mr. Dawson.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second to excuse Mr. Dawson tonight. Roll call, please.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Okay, can I have approval of the agenda?
I'll make a motion. Second.
I have a motion, second. Roll call, please.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Okay, approval of minutes from previous meeting, December 16th, 2024, the safety meeting.
Make a motion to approve. Second.
Motion, second. Roll call, please.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank? I guess they don't have to, right?
No, just the committee members.
Gotcha, guys.
All right, December 16th, 2024, regular meeting.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion, second. Roll call, please.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
December 30th, 2024, special meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, second. Roll call, please.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
And finally, January 6th, 2025, regular meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, second. Roll call, please.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Is there anyone from the public wishing to address council tonight? Now would probably be the time.
You're not from the public, are you?
Well.
Oh, yeah.
An hour later.
I'm teasing.
Go ahead.
Jeremy Gillen, fire chief.
Wait.
We want you on right here.
Yeah, please.
I was stopping in on my rare night off, school being canceled. Give you a kind of update on the fire department from last year. This is a report I gave all the other elected officials that we serve. Kind of outlines the call volume. If you have any questions about it, I can give you more detail in depth. It's pretty standard. The run volume has kind of been pretty the same for the last few years. It goes up in one area, it comes down in another. But overall, it's pretty much the same. So last year was 1,064 calls. The year before, we had just a little bit more than that.
Do you always give out as much aid as this?
That's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do a lot of mutual aid, so it's primarily EMS stuff, but it's also fire too, so.
Overwhelming amount of aid given.
Yeah.
As opposed to receiving.
Yeah. Yep. So, we have a good response from our department.
Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you. correspondence?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in discussion to the ARS tag exchange slash reimbursement options, recently the village signed off on its agreement with ARS in regards to our new contract for this year. Recently during our discussion, there was this idea of if the village would reimburse individuals who currently had tags that they were currently using. And myself and staff decided that it would be easier for the council to discuss about if they wanted to do a reimbursement program, and if they wanted to do a reimbursement program, discuss ideas of how they want to do reimbursements. And tonight behind me, I have Michelle Ryder from ARS, who has come here to speak on any of the details in regards to our contract, but also be able to answer you or be able to answer any questions that you may have for Ms. Ryder. So Ms. Ryder, if you may stand up and go to the podium.
Welcome back.
My name is Michelle Ryder, and I am with Archbold Rescue Service. Here tonight to, I guess, aid in any discussion that you would have regarding any kind of exchange program regarding the tags. I will start by saying that the reason we're switching tags to the new tag system is twofold. The new tags will be serial numbered, and then they also have a die cut in the middle of them, so they're nearly impossible to replicate. We've had replication of tags in the past, unfortunately, and so this new tag system, we have rolled this out in many other communities, very successful, and they are not duplicable, and they're not really, you can't really tear them in half. Things, the little kind of shortcuts people have been trying to get away with for a while, because that whole die cut has to wrap around the top of the tag. I'll show you an example. I only brought one. You can, or printed one copy, but you guys can certainly pass it around for the tag example so you can see what I'm talking about. So the part that I'm referring to, the die cut, would be this pink part here. This is actually cut out of the top of the tag. So if it's ripped in half, the whole tag does not show completely on the top of the bag. So, and again, you'll notice over here, well, not these because they're the proof, but over here there'll be serial numbers. So we can track exactly how many tags were sold, and there cannot be a duplication of numbers. So it's just a way to eliminate any kind of duplication. Large and small appliance tags will also be changed. These will be different colors, and they'll be different sizes. Therefore, when our staff is in the field, they can easily identify that's a large tag item on that or a small tag on that. We've actually used some verbiage of what a small tag would consist of. Of course, you cannot get every item on there. It's some general examples. It says, you know, including and not limited to these particular items. Anybody that has questions about whether their item is a large or a small tag can simply call the village. They'll clear it up. And they will have these also. So that's the reason for the change. And the reason the committee that worked with us on the contract decided it would be a good time to make the change. So it's up to council whether you want to. Anyone who pre-bought tags, you know, do an exchange program, bring in the tags you have. We'll give you equal or value, switch out to the new tags, or reimburse. And so then at that point, it would go back to Mr. Fraser.
Is it March 1st or April 1st that you're planning to have the new tags available?
We will start collecting, the new tags, the switchover is March 1st for use. So they're actually available prior. We will have those. We're scheduled to have them in-house the first week of February from the printer. I asked for a couple days cushion just for any shipping delays or anything that might get wonky. But we should definitely have them available to the village, like that first part of that second week of February. So that still gives you two and a half weeks to offer any kind of program that you want to offer to the residents. I've had villages that have done a tag switchover and have not, and said use up your tags, you've got plenty of notice. And I've had villages that have offered the exchange program. So it's really up to council or administration how you would like to handle that.
And we have had some residents call in that purchased them ahead. So they have $100 worth, which would be 40 tags, or at the old cost. And they were concerned that they were not going to have them used up prior to March 1st. So that's why we were asking council, is it your desire that you guys want to do an exchange program, or do we just want to make a cutoff?
I would be inclined to offer an exchange program at a capped dollar amount, because if there is a duplication value or a duplication issue that's currently going around.
And that was our question, are we going to put a cap on that?
I think per residence, a cap of whatever we would like to say, $40, that's 15 tags.
Is ARS offering a reimbursement to the village for those unused tags?
No, we sell at face value, so it's an even exchange for us.
Okay.
So anything that we have left over, we're gonna discard.
So right. Could we, like, let's say I have my stack, could I exchange, and because it's only $250 extra, right? For, I feel like it's $25 for 10, and now it's going to be $27.50, correct?
That's,
yep, that was the rate. Yes, that is the rate that we as the village are charging residents for, is $27.50 for 10 tags, yes, or a page.
So if they could trade 10 in and just pay $250 extra?
Well, again, this is for the discussion of the council. The administration felt it was easier for the council to discuss, because as much it wasn't necessarily a money issue as much as it was a policy conundrum. So realistically, this is realistically just a discussion. It would probably, in terms of how we would go about it, it would either be an ordinance or a resolution, but ultimately, realistically, if the council doesn't have one agreement about what they want to go about this, they could simply say, you know, if you want then to just have administration or the administrator make that decision, then I can make that decision. But it's ultimately what you feel would be in the best interest of the village. Do you want people to be able to exchange their tags at the flat rate? Do you want to have a certain amount of money put aside for exchanges where after all that money's been used up, then no more tags can be reimbursed? Or do you simply just say, well, because March 1st is when we have officially switched over to the new tags, then people can then decide to buy and sell their leftover tags to each other, and then once come March 1st, then their yellow tags are no longer going to be in use. So I mean, if you want to, you can also decide if you want to table this at the next meeting. It's simply your choice.
Are there receipts given when tags are purchased, or is a tag considered a receipt?
I know at Community Market you get a receipt. I don't know about here.
No, well, if they want a receipt, we'll give them a receipt. We do keep track of the numbers. I mean, we keep them in a spreadsheet of the numbers that we sell.
Okay.
I mean, if you put a limit as to how many they can come in and exchange, you know, I don't.
Is there a handful of people, five people, one person that comes in and buys a whole year's worth? Or?
There are people.
I do.
They're here.
Yeah.
There are people.
So how many would you say you have on hand?
$100 worth.
Okay.
And I probably got 50, so
it's time issue.
Yeah.
You know, and when they knew the price was going up, that they had inclination the price was going to increase, but they did not have the inclination that we were going to change tags. So there were people that came in and bought them as gifts at Christmas time for other people, and so those are the calls we've received. But I haven't heard anybody say they have more than $100 worth.
That would seem excessive.
I mean.
I think we should just exchange them one for one, like a forever stamp. That's my thought.
I'm leaning that way.
This is just a one-time thing. Once it's done, it's done.
I mean, once it's done, yeah.
Are customers like, are you guys probably gonna go to the container option?
I hadn't planned on it.
Okay.
We only put out garbage maybe every other week. I mean, between the tools, we don't generate that much garbage.
As far as the duplicating, do we know if there's been like a huge issue in Delta?
I don't want to specifically speak to the village of Delta, but just overall, any of these tags that are produced the way that the ones that village of Delta is using have been duplicated in the past and in other villages as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I would even say, like, by this certain amount of time, you have to exchange them, right? Would we do it like March 1st?
By March 1st?
Yeah.
I figure.
New tags, I'd say.
I thought, my thought was if, when we take possession of the new tags, we would give them from that point until March 1st to exchange them.
Right.
And after that, we should be.
I mean, based on our conversations that we've had, or based on the verbal conversation I had with Ms. Ryder, they are anticipating that probably by the end of the first week of February is when the tags are gonna come in. And so I can't say when they'll be available, but I mean, I would say, depending on when they come in, by March 1st, you're looking at maybe 2, at most maybe 3 weeks.
So
people would have to exchange.
Once we get the new tags, allow for 2 weeks.
Yeah, because
for the exchange to take.
Because we've already notified the public that we were switching over to new tags. So I would, so yes. By the time the new tags rolled in, you would have between 2 to 3 weeks before March 1st hit.
Are you guys in Community Market, are you still selling tags right now?
So we are the only ones selling the tags at this point.
We discontinued it
at Community Market and at First Federal until after we get the exchange.
And what rate are you selling them at?
$27.50 for 10 tags. That started January 1st.
I have another question. So in the past, if there was a price increase, we didn't roll out a new tag, correct?
Correct.
So the price increase was honored. So if someone like this gentleman here would go and prepay for those tags in advance, he gets the savings.
Yes.
That's how that worked. But now we've got a new tag. So yeah, I would motion that we do face value, one-for-one exchange.
I'll second that.
I got a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yep.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Will this need to be passed in any form of emergency? If we're talking about the second week in February, this needing to be available to the public?
I don't think so. No, I think it's an administrative decision.
Okay.
Can be made. Yes, now we have direction on which way to go. So.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions I can answer about the correspondence that went out to village residents from ARS?
I do have a question. So there are a few people throughout the village that already and they seem to be paying for the rate that was offered in your letter. Are they going to eventually get the $24 rate? Are they going to save the 30, whatever their rate is currently? Or?
They will get the adjusted rate. They will also be receiving a letter explaining that since they already currently have a cart in place, that they can keep the cart and use it. They will get the reduced billing with their next billing cycle. They will move from a bill group. They were paying that for a monthly fee, and now they're going to go into a quarterly. It's all explained in the letter. I have a couple letters here with me, extra copies if anybody needs one of those, but they will get that. We will honor that lower rate.
Can you, before you leave, give a copy of those letters that we're gonna go out? Can you post them in the board out here with the schedule?
Yeah, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that slip that was to be filled out in that letter was for recycles, correct?
Correct, or you could call the phone number. Most people are calling, I'll be honest, and most people are calling in. The majority of the response has been calling in to get the cart as well as the recycling signed up at the same time. We've had really great response on the trash carts.
Will somebody be in the office tomorrow then?
Tomorrow our office is closed. We're not running routes tomorrow. But you can, we will be watching the messages and getting back to everybody.
Okay.
So if you wanna leave a voice message, feel free to do that. The sign up for the recycling is ongoing. You can sign up and do that anytime, whether the office is open or not. So, okay. Anything else?
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was just waiting for you to give me direction. So, all right. So under correspondence of review / discussion of village credit card policy, I know that's been something that has been brought to my attention both in one-on-one discussions as well as been brought in terms of public meetings. Is the village of Delta has not exactly had a policy in regards to how they should use credit cards. I know there has been concerns brought to me by members of the finance committee about how the credit card, about how our credit cards here in the village have been used. So what you have in front of you is a case of how a credit card policy could be lined out. Unfortunately, Mr. Heben couldn't attend tonight, so we have somebody in his place that could discuss a little bit more about the credit card policy. As you have in front of you, this is the city of Rossford and how they use and how their credit card policy is set up. So we have Mr. Murphy here tonight in attendance and of Mr. Heben. So Mr. Murphy, I don't know if there's anything you want to explain more on the credit card policy.
I would be happy to entertain any questions anybody has, but we have not had a problem in Rossford that I'm aware of. We bumped into something probably 2 or 3 years that I was made aware of before our firm got together. I don't know if that's what generated this policy, but since I've been involved with the city, which is about 2010, we've had no problems with the policy use. My recommendation would be that everybody take a look at it. If you got any changes or anything, maybe get them over to Chris and let's, you know, we can tinker with this and you guys can pass whatever policy you want. But we, as far as I know, we're not having any, and I would typically, if there's been a problem, misuse or whatever, it would have come to me, so I would be aware of it.
Mr. Frazier, I'm assuming you discussed this with our finance director.
I did.
How can our PO system and policy like this kind of coincide?
So, as you know, Our current procedure is that when someone goes to purchase something using their credit card, they would need to put in a purchase order. We have a system where we use blanket orders as well, where we have a certain blanket amount that people can use at certain distributors, you could say, to where if they need to go purchase something, they can go ahead and purchase it and then put a purchase order in it for it later, or making sure that it covers underneath the blanket purchase, or the blanket order, I should say. Ultimately, what this would basically make department heads know and understand what they're gonna use their credit cards for and make it more of an outline of what they understand of what they're gonna be using the cards for. So that way there are very little instances, if not almost no instance, of misuse.
Right. I feel like every purchase, no matter how big or small, should generate a purchase order number.
I bet the auditors would agree.
Whether the departments have to
issue
their own, or do they have a way to generate their own purchase order number temporarily?
They can put in a requisition.
And then they can report it to you.
And they also have to provide us a receipt before we approve the purchase as well.
Could you purchase orders if you're going to, if you're at a meeting and go out to eat, though? Like, that would be a credit card, correct? like you're in Columbus for a meeting for over the weekend, that would be a credit card, that wouldn't be a purchase order.
That would.
Yeah.
You'd still have to bring the receipt
right
back.
Yeah.
We could have a blanket purchase order that could be placed against a blanket with a receipt.
And that's kind of what, and again, that's kind of what we do at some of, you know, because we have that at a few of the stores here in Delta, that so that way in the event that one of our departments need to go out and purchase something, in the event that they need a part or they need something else, they can go ahead and they put it underneath that blanket order, but they still have to provide the receipt, but it's within that blanket order rather than just putting it as a purchase order for like $2.35. It's not showing up. Like, there would still be a receipt for records showing that there was a $2.35 purchase, but it would be under the blanket order. So that way they're not having to put in every individual. Because we would be looking at, I would be looking at
1,000 purchase orders.
And tens of pages putting in on our VIP system for these approvals. So it was kind of a way to, yes, minimize the amount of purchase orders put in. But we also make sure that they have the receipts to make sure that we are keeping track with what they are spending.
And hopefully all that can just be reproduced when an auditor comes in and takes a look at those records. Blanket purchase order, here's the receipt that travels with that. That's the cleanest way to do it for audit purposes.
I don't want anybody to have a credit card to question whether or not they're allowed to make a purchase. Like, it needs to be spelled out clear.
I mean,
what you're allowed to buy and what you're not allowed to buy.
I feel like this did a nice job spelling it out.
Right.
I mean, emergencies are emergencies. There's nothing you can do about it, and we have something in place in regarding to when an emergency situation comes up. But you know, this at the very least would give the council assurance that, you know, we have a policy in place to let everybody know that who has to use a credit card, that this is what we expect of them to use it for, and nothing else. Yes, I spend plenty of time per week reviewing invoices and purchase orders. My finance director is assured knowing that I sit at her desk looking at every single one of these invoices for when they come up as purchase orders. And you know, I ask her questions about why things cost so much. If you feel that this is the kind of credit card policy you are looking for, you can simply make a motion to use this as a guideline to draft a new credit card policy, and then we could have that as a resolution at the next meeting, because obviously we would not want to be using the city of Rossford language on our credit card policy.
Well, it's pretty good, but I would recommend that you take a look at it whenever you can and get any thoughts maybe over, and then hopefully if there's nothing there, I don't think there would be anything inconsistent among council members, but if there is, we can bring that to somebody's attention and address it. But I would get any changes that you want to make to it over, and including the, well, we know the Rossford Delta, we can switch it. We'll switch those names for you. Can do a search and replace.
Yeah, we can talk about it next meeting, because I just found it.
But that'd be my recommendation. And then you do need to adopt a formal policy.
Is there more of this document? It references Section 3 in several places throughout. I don't have Section
3. Did he know? I didn't.
No, he just included all this.
Use of city property.
There may be a corresponding one that we need to take a look at.
Okay.
I'll look at this. I haven't had occasion to really mess with this policy. Kevin did tell me if it was going to be discussed, but
this is pages 3 and 4.
Okay.
Something. Yeah. It just.
But it references like a travel city 3.1 travel expense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
5.1 purchasing.
Yeah, and your handbook, you have quite a few other policies, so there may be a corresponding cross-reference that we would need to drop in there. So we can take a look at that. That's not hard.
Yeah, because this section here says you can put tips.
Ross has a travel policy.
Well, it says tips on here, and in our personnel policy, it doesn't allow for that. So.
Good.
I just noticed that. That's why I was going
to
say.
Yeah, we'll draft it up and bring it to the next meeting then.
Crack the whip, Mr. Bear.
That's right. All right, next on the list, looks like village issue property return policies.
Indeed, Mr. Mayor. So it has, another thing that has been brought to my attention recently is that we currently do not have a policy on the books in regards to a return policy for any items that the village has issued to its employees. Now, the police department is an exception. They kind of have their own policy on how they return uniforms, but it's been brought to my attention that we've had issues with former staff returning items back that were issued to them by the village, whether that was uniforms, equipment. Recently with our cell phones, the reason why that was included in the policy was because of the fact that we've been having cell phones recently be issued to not only myself, to our police chief, but we've also had recently our street superintendent and our wastewater superintendent also be issued village issued business cell phones as well. So ultimately what I have found was that we had no policy on the books to hold anybody accountable to return their items that they had been issued by the village. And with this policy, it would allow for the village to give a former employee time to return the items that they were issued. Essentially how I envisioned it was the administration would keep record of what items were issued, whether it's uniforms or other equipment. And upon them leaving the village, we would then require them to return the issued items that they were the items that they were issued. And if they did not return the issued items, well then we would then be able to bill them if they did not return them, or even potentially hold their final check until after they had returned it. Because I had one instance already where somebody did not return a village issued uniform. And because of the fact that we had already given them their final check, as much as we had debated if we could send them a bill, in the end, if they didn't pay that bill, well, then we were essentially going to be eating the cost of that uniform. And I understand, too, that we also had issued T-shirts and sweatshirts with village seals on them. And as much as they may be old, raggedy shirts or uniforms, I feel right now it's in the best interest to have that stuff be returned to the village, because I've also have been notified of some issues of people wearing some old village issued attire and people mistaking that they were representing the village when they were out in public.
If they're wearing a seal, they are representing the village.
And that's
going there,
huh? And that's it, is I have been told that in the past we had issued, say, T-shirts with the village seal on it. They were able to keep that T-shirt after they left, and because they were wearing that, and perhaps they weren't acting in a guidance to our procedures, some people mistook them for working for the village still. And I would much rather have any apparel at least that had the village seal, if not anything that was issued to them by the village, be returned upon leaving. So this return policy was kind of like a straight, simple, to the point kind of policy. Not really no frills to it. Not really the most professional looking policy, but it kind of got to the point.
I did have one question, sort of a legal angle for Kent. In village issue cell phone returns, these should have not be wiped of any cell phone texts or numbers. They should be returned. I feel like that should be included in this policy.
I agree. Obviously, public records issues.
Would somebody face criminal charges if they were to wipe a phone or to turn it back?
Um, p- potentially we would.
Can we note that?
What's that?
Can we note that in policy?
Yeah, we could say subject.
As determined to not do so.
Sure, we could, yeah.
Not that I believe any of our employees would do such a thing.
No. That person may not work here yet.
Yeah, we can say it. I'm not 100% positive that we'd be able to prosecute it, but maybe. The deterrent is helpful.
Even if that was ill-intentional, to know that you can't do that.
Yeah.
And the documentation of return receipt, would that just be like a checklist of?
Yeah, so, yeah, that would be us basically having them, you know, having them fill out a, you know, basically fill out a simple form that just states that they returned all the documents or they returned all the items. Because then that would be our documentation to show, well, you stated you returned all the items and you didn't, so this now legally justifies us to send you a bill or withhold your check until after you've returned all that. And if even if they simply call us back and say, well, I've lost my, you know, well, I've lost my bomber jacket. I don't know where it went. Well, that bomber jacket cost $200. Well, that's coming out of your final paycheck.
Does the village have, I'm assuming the answer is no, I'm pretty sure the answer is no, a list of things, or is it going to do an audit starting if this is passed into legislation? What is the plan? Where is it from everything disseminated from now on? Where does this policy take effect with items that are already out in the world?
So I'm already working with our finance director, and I'm working with other department heads to make sure that we keep track of the items that have been issued. I plan on having a discussion with department heads about what items they feel would be necessary for the village to issue to employees to do their jobs. But as required in this policy, if adopted, that I made the decision that it would be easier to have those items be returned at Village Hall rather than returned to their respective department. Because in another instance that we've had already, as an example, I've had to have the finance director try to track down one of the department heads about equipment that was returned, and she's been trying to work with them to try and figure out what they've returned. And that's when I decided, okay, if they return it here and we can keep a log of what they've returned, then that department head can pick up their equipment and take it back to their respected department building.
I may have missed it, your answer to my question.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. I'm just looking for clarity. So items that have already been given out.
Yes.
So let's say that there's the $300 Carhartt jackets that went out, things of that nature. Things that we know have gone out into the ether. Are you going to be backtracking and auditing? Are they going to be applied to this? Is there going to be a track of those? Or is any item that the village is issuing from today forward?
To the latter, yes. Well,
that doesn't count the cell phones. I
think the cell phones you can track.
Yes.
If it's like Carhartts and stuff that have already been done, that has records have not been kept of that. Sorry.
Okay.
No, I understand. We have been working to collect that data to see what has been issued already. I know some departments have been easier than others because of the amount of staff that they've had. So, but I believe yes, we have been. Keeping track of that. If not, we've been trying to keep track of all that stuff for the auditing purposes.
I like it.
Yep, sounds good to me. All right, anything else on that? I'll move on to the next item, the Delta U Sports Lease.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I would say about at least a week ago, if not closer to 2 weeks ago, I sat down and had a conversation with the president of the Delta Youth Sports Association, or the DYSA. They had discussed and had requested the village if they could use the village's address as part of their nonprofit address, so that way they could receive their mail and be able to receive their payments without any issue of potentially either getting kicked out of one of the other places that they've been essentially renting out a space. So they kind of wanted to have an address to send all their mail as part of their nonprofit status. However, One of the things we had discussed about was, is if they wanted to just simply lease, if they wanted to lease out one of the rooms or one of the offices we had available here at Village Hall. I know with my decision at the last meeting that I chose to have an office down here on the main floor, back behind where the rest of the staff work. So the former administrator's office is currently sitting vacant. And we had discussed that they would, if it was accepted by the council, that they'd be able to rent out the old administrator's office upstairs. I know with it currently not having a table and chairs, we have some leftover table and chairs that the police department had brought to my attention that we could put upstairs into that office for them to use as a meeting space. They would still have that tape, they would have that old desk that's sitting up there. They also have that little coat rack area to where they could hang up their coats. And it would just be a space for them just to realistically conduct business. And what the agreement you have in front of you is basically stating that for 1 year, for $1 a year, they would, that's what we would charge them to rent out the space. This has not been reviewed by the DYSA. This is the first time that that has been brought to the council for review. So if the council feels that they are okay with this lease, then I can then forward it to the DYSA for them to review and approve. And we still have some stuff upstairs in the old administrator's office, but once both parties have signed off on it, then we can start moving along to start really finishing out and taking and vacating the rest of the stuff that's sitting upstairs.
Is this more or less an exact carbon copy of the Chamber of Commerce agreement?
Yes, this is actually, this came from a, in fact, this actually came from a what's the word I'm looking for? Lack of a better term, it came as an example that Mr. Heben emailed to me, kind of used as a template. That's what I was thinking of. It came as a template that was, yes, very similar to the lease agreement between ourselves and the chamber.
Definitely need those provisions,
yeah.
Obviously.
Okay, well, I definitely do have the draft of the old chamber, if you want to make a motion to approve the lease agreement with the addition of the insurance liability that was laid out in the chamber lease, we can certainly add that before I send it off to the DYSA.
And do I get eyeballs on that before it goes out, make sure we're...
Yes. Absolutely. Kevin hasn't reviewed it though for like specifics.
Well, no, this is word for word exactly what he laid out to me in the template. It was just I changed up a couple of words to lay out.
Yeah,
I'd like
to take a look at it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I have no issue with DYSA using the office space. Nor do I.
I mean, this is
okay.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, yes.
I will make a motion. Law Director review of documents.
That's good.
We need a second.
Oh, okay. That's like, were you finishing with that? And changing it to include those other areas.
Yeah, the insurance and indemnity.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Shire?
Yep.
Demoline?
Yes.
Johnson?
I don't know if I should abstain from this or not. They're a nonprofit, my wife's president.
Probably.
I'll abstain.
Yeah.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Error on the side of caution.
Yeah. Moving on to reports and updates, administrator.
Before we, I was going to. going to say before we move on, but it is still the administrator. What's the status of the lease with the payment?
So they have officially informed me that they will not be reviewing the lease until their next board meeting, which is going to be the first, it's going to be that first week of February. And then once they review it, then that's when they're going to make their decision. Unfortunately, I did not know about when their last board meeting was. I didn't find out about that until the day they had it. So because I didn't know about it, I did not send it off to them. But now they already have it. They're in the midst of reviewing it. And like I said, they will be reviewing it at their next board meeting.
Are they still continuing to use
Yes.
the facility?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any issue with that, Ken?
Well, we need a lease in place. Did the other lease already expire?
I do not believe there was ever a lease.
Yeah. Oh.
This was something that came up in our insurance.
Gotcha. All
review.
Right. Yeah, no, you should have a lease because we're a little the risk is very low, but there's still some associated with it. You're still kind of hanging out there.
Okay, thank you.
Administrator report.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So as you have attached to you is my report from what's been occurring in the last couple of weeks. I just wanted to give you a brief update that since my last council meeting, I have sat down with a couple of the investors from Delta Acres LLC in regards to a potential residential development that they would like to pursue here in Delta. In my discussions that I've had with both the investors and their engineering consultants, two things have been brought to my attention in regards to this development. One being the TIF, which a TIF is an acronym for a tax increment finance district. And I have been told that here in the state of Ohio, it is possible for somebody to receive a TIF for a residential development. Now, in terms of if it's allowed to be put on where it would currently sit on farmland, I am still trying to learn and understand that as we speak. But also another thing that was discussed in these meetings is regarding who would front the costs for infrastructure. Now, this development would potentially have 92 single family house parcels at about half an acre, close to, and then an additional 20 condos right along between County Road H and 7-2. As I said to you in my report, not only have I been researching this because I have never seen a TIF be potentially worked in this manner, but I am also wanting to know who's gonna upfront the cost for the infrastructure. Because I feel that financially the village may not be able to cover it if we were held 100% to cover it. And I also want to sit down with the investors and some other, and not only myself, but perhaps our law director, the school, the superintendent, and maybe a member or two of council, if they want to join that meeting. Because I've only known about what's been discussed in previous meetings, and I just need to know where the conversation is going to be going forward. So like I said, we're kind of in the midst of still discussing about the potential of this development and where it would go. I also recently met with a representative from the Ohio Department of Transportation and the Fulton County engineers to discuss and be updated about where we are at with the Love's Travel Stop. I have been informed that they are basically waiting on the village on some permits and approvals that they have stated to me that they feel that the village has kind of stalled on our end of the project. Not their word, not my words, theirs. And so because of the fact that I am not an engineer, I am not trained as an engineer, nor do I have an engineering background, I was trying to reach out to DGL, but because DGL is already involved in one matter of this project, it would be considered a conflict of interest. So I had reached out to Mr. Sika, and he recommended Manick and Smith out of Maumee, and they are now handling this aspect, and they have agreed to represent our interest on the project. So we are trying to work as fast as we can to try and help with this project moving forward. But I also knew for a fact that going into this project, I had my own concerns, and I also have had concerns brought to me about this project. So at the very least, I am making sure that we have our X's and O's covered, so to speak, before this project breaks ground.
I would like to request clarification from Lugs in regards to their stormwater runoff, because the last plan that I had seen was they had planned to discharge in Bat Creek upstream of our freshwater intake for our water plant, and we had issues with that because we don't have automatic shutoff, and if there was ever an issue at Lugs, there's contamination of our drinking water supply for the village of Delta, and that is not something I'm willing to compromise on to have the truck stop. I want love to be here. I want the job. I want the opportunity. I want everything, the great things that brings, but I'm not willing to risk the drinking water of the village residents.
And I see your point, Councilman Shearer, and I agree with you, which is why I have also been working with our law director on seeing who is allowed to issue a stormwater permit. And I have also seen that before I got here, we had drafted a potential permit for them to make sure they were doing, and we were doing at least monthly testing to make sure that they were complying with what our expectations of them. So yes, we are trying to work with them diligently. The only frustrations that they had expressed to us was the fact that of our transitions that we've had over in the administrator's office, and it's kind of stalled their work that they can get done. So I have been working to try and get that done, but at the same time, I've also making sure that we've had our checklist covered, you know, making sure that we've had our end looked over before we start making any more compliances.
Are we able to enforce a stormwater runoff permit on an entity based on their zoning and restrictions? Because I did not believe that they would be. Is that enforceable by the village?
You know, I've been reviewing it more in our zoning ordinances, but again, I will need to. But I'm also going to discuss. I'm also going to consult with our law director to make sure that is something we could potentially do. Because I see where you're going, and I completely agree that, you know, I don't want anything contaminating our freshwater supply. So I am in the midst of reviewing that right now.
I would just appreciate clarity on that, whatever it becomes available.
I have recently attended my first Chamber of Commerce meeting, as well as my first park board meeting. In the park board meeting, as I was there to attend, there was discussion from the DYSA in regards to requesting the village do the field dragging on the baseball and softball diamonds. And the discussion has been tabled, but it appeared that the discussion was going towards having the village upfront the cost to do the field dragging ourselves. As I had been told, there had been issues with volunteers field dragging using our equipment in the past. So again, this has been tabled. It was an idea that had been brought up for discussion. Hopefully after the next meeting, I have a little bit more information of where the conversation goes. And then as my role as the village's village administrator / zoning inspector, I have issued three zoning certificates and have conducted two on-site inspections. One was a setback inspection for a house here on Wood Street, and then another one, it was in regards to an accessory unit on Main Street. I have noticed in our zoning fees that they appear to be a little bit outdated in terms of how much we are charging as to when it was approved, because the current zoning fees reflect when they were approved in 2015. I mean, due to inflation, those zoning fees should be up quite a bit. And just like I have seen concerns about in regards to, we don't, you know, on our website, we state that we issue building permits, but we have not issued building permits at all. All we've done is issue zoning permits. And I think later on at another discussion, that may be something that the village should consider, because while Wood County does issue permits and inspections for commercial and industrial builds, they don't do residential. And from my experience working down in North Carolina, there are some things that can be hidden behind drywall once it's already been set up. And so if perhaps the council wants to look into potentially approving procedures on, not only issuing and approving and issuing building permits, but also potentially the idea of bringing in a part-time building inspector to inspect residential builds as they're being built in Delta.
I may be wrong, but I don't believe Fulton County, in essence, requires residential building permits.
No, they do not.
So Delta would be the only municipality that requires it.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes, you would be correct. If it's something we issue, we would be the only municipality in the county that would issue building permits as well as issuing and conducting inspections for residential builds. But I can tell you this, even when I lived in a growing community in southeastern North Carolina, north of Myrtle Beach, I never once heard one builder say, I am not going to build here in this community because they required an inspection. Usually it was, they were always kind of glad that we required an inspection because they would be concerned themselves if they were purchasing a home that was not inspected during the building process.
I would be curious to see figures of what your proposal in terms of fee is and what a proposal of bringing a part-time employee building inspector would be and things of that nature. I'm not all in and not all out, just you can get us some numbers.
I could absolutely do that. And then, so that is the end. So then that's the end of my report as the administrator. What you have after the administrator's report are departmental reports from the streets department, the wastewater department, and then the water department. I understand that the way that the previous administrators had done it has they had kind of just included short little reports from the departments every couple of weeks. However, because I had seen in some reports in some weeks that there was really nothing going on in the department, like they literally wrote nothing as part of their report, I figured at the very least we could start with having them supply a report monthly, at least in their words about what they're doing. So that way that allows you as the council to know what they're also doing month to month. Now if there's a way you want to change it up in terms of, you know, what they're accomplishing or what they're working on, I understand that there's some aspects that's part of their job responsibility, and I'm not sure if you want to see, like, you know, again, in the streets report, as you see, the streets and superintendent stated that he's overseen three funerals. Well, I'm not sure if that's something you want to see as that's part of their responsibility, that they've overseen three funerals this month, or if you want to just see more about projects that they're working on and how they're working towards accomplishing upon completion. So
I think I would be content with projects that are being completed. I don't think any of council wants to manage village employees, as that's an overstep of our bounds. So just the projects that are in the works, the projects that have been completed, that are going to have a direct consequence on the village's finances and services that we provide. I'm also curious who took the dead deer.
The dead deer.
There's a roadkill.
And where does it go?
The
fresh enough, there's a list, the police department has a list, and they call people, you can get on the list, and if you want to come out and harvest the deer, people come out and get it, yeah. So there's a list that's, that we keep, that we call, and it's kind of, we try to make it, if it's a fresh, you know, that it could get harvested.
Waste not, want not.
Exactly.
Or it gets covered in mulch.
Yeah, I thought these reports were more to the administration.
They were initially, the reports came, they were brought to the administrator.
So I would say.
For one thing, because of, I've had a lot of things put on my table that I've had to figure out. I figured this would kind of be like an experiment, just to see where we're going, to see if this is where we wanted to go. Like I said, I know in parts of their job responsibility, like I said, I wasn't sure if you really wanted to see that, you know, again, they were doing work on Adrian Street 1 week. You know, I'm pretty sure some people don't want to be reading that.
I'm a curious person, so I actually really enjoyed these reports.
I do too. I think it's important for them to report to you if you think it's important to you. And don't change it for us. That's what they give you, stick it in our bag.
No, that's, I completely understand. I just know that when I was reviewing, as Councilwoman Frank had mentioned to me before, is that, you know, in the past, the previous administrators had provided a simple little report of what was going on in each department. Problem is I found that when you did it every 2 weeks, it was, in some cases, it was kind of redundant. So some reports had, I had seen where some reports on the administrative report had nothing going on in the department. And I went, well, clearly you had to have done something over the last 2 weeks, or else we would be having questions about what are you doing while you're at work. But on the other hand, I figured at the very least, they start giving me like a once a month feedback, and I just wanted to see the base of what the council wanted to see in these other department reports. Because again, everybody's different. Some people would rather see where projects are being updated. Others would want to see like, cool, you know, we worked on, you know, you had 3 calls that you worked on this week. Okay, well, at least it shows that, you know, we're doing something here.
Or Gene. Yeah, we assume our next report is going to be, I spent last week preparing the report.
I do think that with the water report, I think I may ask her to simplify that into what she's accomplishing versus what she's in progress. Because, I mean, at the very least, she keeps herself very busy, as you see.
She likes to remind us that she's smarter than us.
Okay. You all set to move on? Finance director.
An approval of invoices.
Motion to approve. Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Shire.
Yes.
Demeline.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Frank.
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
And the other thing I distributed to council was a quarterly tax rate comparison for fourth quarter.
And is that the final for 2024?
That is.
Okay. Law director?
No report, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening. So as you can see from our report, on the second page, there is a blank SRO, or School Resource Officer Agreement. It's a bare skeleton, basically a scaffolding of what an SRO agreement would look like. Currently, Delta, Pike York Delta Local School is the only district in the county that doesn't have an SRO. So this is something that I've met preliminarily with Superintendent Burke. We discussed it. He likes the idea. Obviously, he has to take it to the school board. The school board has to approve. So this is just, I kind of gave him this is a sample of what it could look like. I also gave him Swanton, was the most recent district to add an SRO as a school resource officer. The number that they put in for that the school district should pay was $44,000 with a 3% increase annually.
We have reviewed that. I actually had that. I did. That's mine.
Oh, shoot, throw it out.
That's why it's so brilliant.
That's why it's so good.
It's 2 pages longer than Kevin's. Come on, you were thinking it.
This seemed really wordy.
So we just had a preliminary discussion with the school superintendent to kind of go over a gauge interest. They're interested in it. And I wanted to present to you kind of what a contract could look like, an agreement, MOU with the school district, and then kind of take some feedback as to what everyone felt would be equitable amount for that number to be. That's not something we have to figure out today, but just that in the future, just get an idea of what we want that number to be, and if there's anything else in there that we want to be, that we want to have different in that contract. One of the things that we look into, we want to do a little bit differently. Swan kind of had their SRO as the main person, the only person doing what would be considered project work. So the basketball games, dances, football games, that kind of thing. I didn't want to put that all on the SRO, especially a lot of our officers have children. Some of our officers have grandchildren. They have things that they want to go do with their family. So kind of talking with the school district, we discussed offering it as project work to the SRO first. If the SRO can't do it, then we'd offer it to other officers in the department as project work, and then that would go at the agreed upon rate of $40 an hour, and if they need the cruiser, $10 to the village for the cruiser, just like we did in the Yeti room. And that seemed to go pretty well last week, and they didn't have any issues as far as I know. But the race went off without a hitch. And
if I can jump in, we have also access to all the other dollars from the different jurisdictions. All of our jurisdictions have SROs except for one. So we can get the other numbers. You know, I'm sure it depends on how big the school is, that kind of stuff. But
the school's paying, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You just want to make sure that number covers you, so you don't
right.
you're not lose, you don't want to lose money out of the
whatever percentage they're
yeah.
being at the school.
Ish.
The school covers, and then we would offset their other hours that they pick up when school's not in the rest of the year.
Right. The way it's written is they give so much to the village per year for that officer. And so we just have to kind of go over that number, and SWAT and had 44,000 was the number.
Yeah. How does that fit into our compensation plan? You know, if that officer makes more, not being SRO, cover the rest of their pay a certain portion of year? How do we
would cover it in the summer?
We're still
the school would be responsible.
Yeah. No, I don't think their wage would change.
Yeah,
no.
The school just provides a bulk set of money to pay them.
Yeah. Yes.
In the past, we paid them and then we invoiced the school.
Yeah, we pay them and then they pay us.
I'm talking about the SRO.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how we did it in the past.
So you guys did do that in the past?
We didn't have that in SRO before, yeah.
And I looked for that contract and didn't find anything. I think that was several years ago, and I'm not sure what that contract looked like. But I got the most recent one that we've done locally. This is this one.
Yeah. Would this be a new hire, or?
My goal wouldn't be not have it be a new hire. I want it to be an officer that I've worked with and got a feel for, because it's a special position that somebody that I want to be able to trust to put in that position. There's an officer on the department that has expressed interest in being an SRO. They don't have the training, so we have to send them off to the SRO training. But then at that point, with them being for the majority of the year there, I would like to fill that seventh position, or at least have a discussion about filling that seventh position, so it doesn't take away from our manpower. But there is an officer specifically that's interested, and I think would do good at it, do well over there in the school district. Any more SRO questions?
Nope.
Okay, so on a lighter note, we had our first brew with the blue. A couple people from the council stopped by.
I
accidentally maybe.
Yes.
Ratted out.
I was there.
Oh, you weren't there when I was there.
So that went well. We had 15 to 20 people probably show up at different times. Good conversations, and it was good to get to know the local, the people, and for them to get to know me. We did get some feedback about changing up hours and days, maybe doing it on the weekends so that people, you know, 9 and 10 on Tuesday morning is kind of tough for everybody to make, so we're going to move that around and do it at some different times. We were talking earlier, kind of came up about a warm spot with the this office be open, with the building be open. So our building, we reached out to IT to talk to them about putting the phone inside, as we talked about before, and then having the lobby accessible 24/7. They're looking into that, so as soon as we can get that done and get the interior door with the get upgraded to have the file pass for the officers to go in instead of having the lock. It only has a handle lock right now, and that handle lock, if you unlock it with the key, you have to remember to relock it. And so we've had issues where officers don't unlock the door, go in and don't relock it behind themselves, and that's actually becomes a lead violation, because behind that door we have records and different stuff with personal identifying information. So to kind of get rid of that, we're looking at changing that door to a key fob entry only, so the officer goes out to the public area, uses the restroom, and then goes back in, they key fob in and out, and they don't have to worry about relocking that door. Once we can get that done, we'll get the phone moved inside, and then that space, while not huge, could be a space that's open 24/7 in bad weather, where if somebody needed to seek refuge, they could. So that's also an option in the future that we can look at.
Sounds good.
Okay. I think that's everything. And any more questions? I know we had the price for the new vehicle for 2025. New vehicle. We currently have 5 vehicles. It would be a 15, 17, 19, 20, and 21. And those are the years that are made, except for 21 was really 23 because it was a COVID year where it got skipped. We had gotten a new cruiser. The department got a new cruiser every year, every other year, excuse me. And so that got skipped, is what I was told. If we do get an SRO, my goal would be to have a 19 be the SRO vehicle. That's a Tahoe. It kind of gets the worst gas miles and it's not a very good road cruiser for officers. But it'd be a good one for the SRO to use to just drive back and forth between the schools. And also, the SRO having a vehicle, he could travel between different schools, but it'd also be a good deterrent parked in front of the school, having SRO there. So any issues, big or small, before somebody comes in and see, hey, there's a police officer here, take it down a notch. So that would be my goal. So at that point, 15 is the vehicle that I drive. Currently, we could repurpose 15. If we do get a new cruiser as a village vehicle or sell it, those would be the options. So I leave that up to Chris and the village council to decide what they want to do with that vehicle. If we need to, we could do the same thing with 17, and we just have 19 as an SRO. But I would like to have, so 21, 23, and the potential of 25 would give us 3 newer cruisers that would be road cruisers. They would be the exact same make, model, same paint job, so we'd have some uniformity there with our fleet, and then we'd have 3 vehicles. So if we had one has any kind of issue, an accident, or breakdown, we still have 2 vehicles. We could put 2 officers out on the street at one time. So that would be the goal with that.
We did have a vehicle in the budget for 2025 for the police, correct, Lynn?
Yes. Yes, it was budgeted for.
I can't remember how much
was put in. They gave me the new amount.
15, being the oldest one in the fleet, has approximately 170,000 miles on it right now.
Can you repeat the years again?
15, 17, 19, 21, and 23. Okay, 21 is also 23, but to keep you informed.
Can they amend it? Can they amend the amounts?
Yeah.
Before they vote?
Where is the Tahoe at currently? Is it at the station? I feel like I never see
it. It's in and out. That's the one that Sergeant Walker likes to drive. So that's the one that he uses a lot.
Okay.
But it would be. It'll be the one that was going to make the SRO one. I think it makes the most sense as far as what the fleet goes.
I don't know what was budgeted for.
Any more vehicle questions? And then, do you have a question?
Yeah, just, on the pricing. So it's we've got in our ordinance, price of $47,358 with associated detailing for less than $2,000 extra. Is that total all included cost at, we'll say, $44,000, or is there going to be further charges to get the vehicle fitted for
there,
police?
There would still be further vehicles to get it outfitted with the police stuff.
Yeah, so according to our purchase orders that we have in our VIP system, we currently had the amount set for the Durango at 43,000 $531 even. And then we had an additional PO for upfitting that Durango to be an interceptor at $18,020.71.
What's the timeline being that people outfitted and in service?
It's going to take a couple months.
What was the original one, the $43,000?
According to the amount that we had in the purchase order was $43,531 even.
For the vehicle?
For the vehicle.
Right.
Like I said, for the upfitting, it's going to be an additional $18,020.71.
You talked about odd years getting vehicles. Is that something like, is there like an end date on that, or is it just every odd year you buy a new vehicle?
It's pretty much been every
year. That's how we budgeted every other year.
It's every other year the police get a new vehicle.
Okay, yeah.
Got two in 23 because
we
couldn't get COVID. How does council feel about keeping vehicles?
Yeah, amended. I think we need to look at a strong look at recycling vehicles to different departments before we just sell them.
Is there any, how much work is, if we were to keep a vehicle in-house, is that has to be taken out of it?
So you just, you're going to have to take out some of the miles, the vehicle miles. A lot of that we could do ourselves. Some of it we need somebody else to do, but like you got to take off the lights. I mean, you know, take off Delta Police. Some of those things are things we can do in-house. But taking off the lights, you got to reseal this, the roof of the vehicle as well. It's a lot of the miles and radio stuff. Some of the officers and the police clerk have done that kind of stuff before to kind of cut down costs or just take, you know, they know how to fix these things and take them apart. So there's a lot of what we can do in-house, probably.
Demo days.
Yeah.
So I'm
a little bit of love, Bruce.
Back to the Dodge or whatever.
Yes,
ma'am. Once everything is all said and done, this $41,000 is just for the vehicle. The $1,900 is for
upgrading it to the interceptor.
No.
You better jump in here.
$18,000.
So this doesn't include the eight. It would
correct.
Be this cost plus 18,000.
Both those numbers, correct.
Councilwoman Frank, if I may, further in our agenda is the emergency ordinance regarding the purchasing of this vehicle.
Right.
We will have to make an amendment to that. We'll need to amend that ordinance, but as long as you approve that amendment to that or the amended ordinance, then we could still go ahead and make that purchase.
The amendment is including the $18,000.
Yes. Yes. So we can continue the discussion once we get to the ordinance.
Any more questions about the fleet in general? I think that's all I had. We did partner with Humane Society. We have the drop-off box in our lobby. Drop off supplies so they can get donated to the Humane Society. It actually is full, so we're going to have to get it. She'll come out and meet us and pick it out from us. So it's going well.
I do have one thing.
Sure.
It seems really petty, but it was brought to me, so I'm going to pass it on to you,
sure.
Mr. Chapel. There was a minor complaint of running in the grass by the bathroom checks by police officers.
Okay.
So that's good. Just be careful pulling in to check bathrooms.
We did move or put up the speed sign that checks for speed electronically. It's right in front of the hall here. So it has a battery. I'm not sure exactly how long it lasts, but it previously been deployed and the battery ran out. If there's other spots that the council has ideas that they'd like to see me put it up at, we can move it around, you know, leave it someplace for a couple weeks, recharge the batteries, and put it somewhere else. So if that's anywhere, you have anyone that you know has made a specific complaint about a neighborhood with speeding, and they'd like to get that sign put up. It doesn't record the speed, but it's just a visual deterrent to show somebody, hey, you're going too fast in this neighborhood. We'd like to put it by.
Coming up from west to town.
Eastbound.
Yeah, coming eastbound, west
okay.
to town.
I was going to say on Locust Street, but no one's going to care if there's a speed sign. It's
no.
a challenge at that point.
Yeah, that's.
No, if you want to stop into town,
okay.
At least the truckers will see it,
right.
Even though they don't stop. slowed down.
That's probably like where.
I think it was just happening not too long ago.
It has been. I think it, if you go back and forth, you know, to the other areas, at least it's a visual. And I wanted to make a comment too that I heard you personally had gone to, I don't know how many businesses, and stopped in the businesses and introduced yourself, and that was very well accepted and appreciated. So kudos to you for doing that.
Thank you, I'm glad to hear it. It wasn't this week, it was a week or two ago, but it was still cold then too, so.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I think that's all I have.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Anything else from any of the other committees or members of council? All right, moving on to old business, ordinance 01-2025, second reading.
Ordinance 01-2025 is an ordinance establishing certain parking on Main Street between Wood Street and Madison.
So moved.
Second. I have a motion, second. Roll call, please.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
All right, moving on, ordinance 03-2025, second reading.
Ordinance 03-2025 is an ordinance to supplement Ordinance 35-2024 to make supplemental appropriations for the current expenses of the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2025.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion, second. Roll call, please.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Resolution 01-2025, second reading.
Resolution 01-2025 is a resolution authorizing the village administrator to accept the quote from Shank Concrete to crush the accrued concrete from residential dumping and the demolition of the public swimming pool.
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and second. Roll call, please.
Frank?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
All right, moving on to new business. Ordinance 04-2025 as an emergency.
Ordinance 04-2025 is an ordinance authorizing the purchase of a patrol vehicle for the Delta Police Department and declares an emergency.
Do we want to talk about the amendment first?
Yes. So, as I was referring to earlier in the conversation, is so currently what you have on ordinance number 04-2025 is that in section one you currently have that reads the village administrator is authorized to purchase a police vehicle from Terry Hendricks Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram for the total sum not to exceed $41,973.58 along with associated detailing of $1,900. We need to have that amended to reflect, so we need the council to, if they would like to approve this ordinance, we need to reflect in an amendment that the actual amount for the purchase would be $43,531.00 with the associated detailing or upfitting of $18,020.71.
Now, that $18,000 for outfitting doesn't go to the dealership.
Correct.
They don't do that one.
Correct.
That goes to the company putting on the lights, the radio.
Putting the computer.
Correct. I understand, but this is written that it goes to the, is it not written that way? So I want to make sure that we understand that we're not paying.
Yeah, we.
I was going to say, shouldn't it be included as a separate section?
Yeah, we can amend that to say that amount will go to who does the upfitting.
I've got it in my email, I can find it, I'll get it to you.
The identified.
Subcontract,
yep. So that would be as amended.
But is this $1,900, is that like tax and title fees, or what is that? Is that supposed to be for lights? That's just not right.
No, I believe that's stuff, like it's detailing, it's like a dealership fee, basically.
So that number still ties with...
Yes, that number goes with the main purchase.
We're not changing that number.
Correct.
The $1,900 does not get changed. We
Correct.
need to add an additional value for special items, interceptor items.
Yes, the upfitting is $18,000. That's separate to a different company.
Right.
So you want three?
I was gonna say the 41 plus the 19 is 43,873.
So I guess the question that we're all coming to is the 43 removing the 1900, or is the 1900 on top of the 43?
Yeah, it looks like the purchase orders, 43,531, and then the upfitting 18,020.71.
So
that
like
is the extent of the PO.
It's only a difference of.
But your purchase order can't go to two vendors.
It looks like there's.
Looks like there's two
separate
lines.
Ones.
Well, it was. It both came out of it, the purchase orders came from both the police department. So the only thing that our purchasing, our VIP system allows me to access to see is which department it came from, who made that request, and then the amount.
Okay. So this resolution is to purchase the vehicle from Terry Hendricks.
Yes.
The $18,000 does not go to Terry Hendricks. It doesn't need to go on this resolution. It could be a different resolution, or you need to add a section.
I see what you're saying. That's what, I think you're right. That's what it looks like.
Yep.
So those both go to the. So we can do the upcharge at the next one. Upfitting.
We can just get the vehicle purchase.
Yeah. Let's do the up. We do the separate. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Do the upfitting on a separate ordinance next one. And we obviously that he needs to know.
Yep. We'll have it.
Who it's going to. Yeah.
This one will at least allow us to purchase the vehicle.
Yeah. That's probably
the next meeting. Has to get it.
Once we get it, then we can get it.
So your new total, though, the 43,531, is actually short by $342 and some odd cents.
Correct. Does the 1900 still stand?
That's where they're short.
So what amount should that be?
It's about $300 difference.
I couldn't tell you. If that's the total number that goes to the dealership, then it's.
Well, that was the total number that was put in there. That was the total number that was put in the purchase order. So either the purchase order is wrong, and that could be easily corrected, or this amount that's put on this ordinance is not correct. Either way, actually,
does it need to be done tonight?
Let's get it figured out and get it corrected.
We'll get it squared away. I'll get the numbers right, and I'll double check with that. If that 1900, what exactly that goes to, if it's the title, that kind of stuff, what the detailing includes for that number, so I can give an accurate answer to that, and then make sure if it's the 531 or the 831.
So it goes to first reading. No,
that works. That's fine.
Or table it.
We can table it.
Yeah, I would recommend you table this discussion to the next meeting.
Motion. Motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Adams?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Any questions related to today's council proceedings?
Going back to the refuse tags, I said that you're going to reimburse everyone that has purchase tags in advance. How are you going to notify the public that has those tags that you're going to reimburse them? Not everybody has Facebook.
I'll have to put it, maybe I'll put a sign up at the store.
Okay.
And I can put it on Facebook, I can put it on our website.
Right. Somehow, a lot of people out there have access to
ARS, are you still looking to send out any more correspondence by mail or no?
Not at this time,
okay.
No.
And I've got two more things, comments. The Love's truck stop that they're looking at putting in. Had you contacted the EPA about them putting in a stormwater retention pond that'll accommodate the runoff from the parking lot? I work in hazmat.
Yeah, so they have a stormwater retention pond in their design that would qualify. Unfortunately, the permitting for that style and the area that they're in does not allow us, as far as we're.
That's your fresh water. I understand that.
To enforce a stormwater runoff. That's what I'm looking for.
tack on the water bill? Any wordage on the garbage tax?
She may be able to put up a small thing on the February bills.
Okay.
You said you had two more.
And then your building, I'm sorry.
You're good.
I squirrel out. The building code, great idea. Have you pursued it with the county? To force their issue in the, doing the building? That's gonna be an undertaking on,
Currently, Wood County services Fulton County for commercial inspections.
Just commercial, but not.
I think he only comes like once a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Used to work in Wood County.
Yeah.
And retired from there, but I understand that they have their own program there, but not for residential, for commercial.
Is it?
Which community wants to be the first one to roll out a red carpet for Fulton County building inspector? Building health.
Are you looking at an expense to having somebody come in here and do that on?
Right.
On a good basis. Good idea, but.
Especially for getting 19 new homes and 20 condos.
Yeah. Most, if you have a reputable builder, you're usually good hands. They follow the rules, but if you hire somebody who lives next door.
That's why we're not.
Yeah. Are there any others?
Real quickly, I just wanted to mention that we've been working diligently to try to reach the owners slash manager slash site manager slash anybody at Linwood Court. They are not going to be using the refuse tags. They're actually a commercial account, and they have been, and they should have been switched over a long time ago. So with the change to the new tags March 1st, we would like to incorporate the change to them being a commercial business at that time. I would like to speak to somebody that owns it, manages it, so we can have these discussions. I literally called 10 phone numbers.
We had an individual come in and try to make contact with them a couple of months back, actually.
Okay.
In regards to tenant situations.
Do you guys have any contact?
So I guess let it be known to.
Yes, that was Oakview.
Oakview, okay.
Okay, I thought maybe it was the other one, but I just wanted council to be aware, should any of your constituents say, well, all of a sudden cannot we not use these refuse tags? We're trying to make the connection, and we're trying to make the crossover, you know, seamless, but we just cannot get a hold of anybody. So I wanted to just bring it up in case anybody here had a lead. So they did not receive the letters because they're not actually even considered. They weren't on the residential mailing list from the village. They should not have been using refuse tags for a very long time. So anyway, we're trying to make that change.
So their residential tenants are not, they cannot use the residential refuge. Is that correct?
So any dwelling with three or more units is considered commercial. That's right, written in the contract, and they've always been grandfathered in for some unknown reason. We've done some research. Chris did some research. I did some research. Going clear back to my almost 15 years with the company, we can't figure out why they were ever using them to begin with, who made the arrangement, who okayed it. But they are a commercial entity within the village.
So they need a commercial receptacle.
They need a commercial receptacle. We'd of course love to do that, but we also would like to notify the residents of the change so they know what's coming.
Yeah.
So.
Do you guys have anything on record for who owns?
I gave her what information we have. The property management company is Birch Realty, and I don't remember what the name of the trailer park was.
None of those are good numbers.
I mean, we're talking about
numbers.
Like
so
10
we,
to 15 residents, maybe we can just go knock on doors.
We
I
haven't.
I was going to say, if someone knows if there's a manager over there, I'll go.
I know. If they are still the on-site manager, I can give you that information. They do. That I know they live over there.
Is it the number you gave me?
Yeah.
Because no one's returned any calls.
You might have to go back knock on their door.
Okay. Okay.
They don't answer. They just don't respond. So.
Number I don't recognize. Anything else? The next regular meeting for the Village Council will be
Monday, February 3rd, 2025 at 5:30 p.m. And I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Adam?
Yes.
So